Welcome to the Do Your Good podcast series. In this podcast series, you'll hear from me, Sybil, and other experts in the field to help you make your money matter and make a huge difference in the world. I come to you with over two decades of experience as a person who's helped donors give away over $45 million in donations, both large and small. This podcast series is meant to give you the tools you need to be effective in the world and fund nonprofits and issues that you care about with meaning and purpose, and to make a true, deep difference in the world. Hello, everyone. I'm excited for you to hear this rerun episode with Peter Stengel. Peter is an expert at leveraging public dollars and private philanthropy together, and I thought you'd get a lot out of this interview, so I hope you have a great time listening to it. And as you know, I'm working hard on a special new series that I'm going to release in the fall. That's why I'm doing some of these reruns of some of my favorite interviews. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with Peter. Peter, I am so happy you're on my podcast today. I interviewed you a while ago for a project I was doing for the Hewlett Foundation as a consultant. I was thinking through, you know, and interviewing folks who are working on wildfire issues. And when I interviewed you back then, I was just so interested in the work you do with the U.S. Endowment for Forestry and Communities, and the fact that you are very important as an intermediary, leveraging public dollars and private dollars to then really work on an issue that we all care about. And so I thought my donors would be really interested in understanding the mechanics of how you do this, because it is a question that comes up often, is like, how do we leverage public dollars effectively? And also, Peter, you were telling me before we started the interview that you have birds singing in the background, and I can actually hear them. It's great, though. I love it. It adds flavor to
nature.
Exactly, exactly. So, Peter, before we get into, you know, your words of wisdom and advice for us in terms of how can we do even a better job at leveraging public dollars as private philanthropists, and as well as anything else you want to tell us, talk to me about, you know, what got you into this line of work and why are you so passionate about what you're doing?
Well, first of all, thank you. It's great to be with you. It's a treat to have the opportunity to speak with you, and very grateful for the work you did for the Wildfire Funders Group, summarizing all our various activities. So thank you very much for doing that. I've been interested in nature my entire life. My passion is birds. My dream was to grow up to be an ornithologist at a university and teach ornithology and do research. And so I went to graduate school to get a PhD so I could follow that path. And about midway through graduate school, had an epiphany and realized that what really interested in me was conservation more than science. And so I began to pivot to look for a job that would allow me to have a bigger impact on conservation. And so after getting my graduate degree, went to work immediately for a foundation called National Fish and Wildlife Foundation based in Washington, D.C. And I spent 20 years with them, and then the past 12 years at the U.S. Endowment for Forestry and Communities.
That's great. I love that summary. It's so succinct and exact. It's wonderful, Peter. And NIFWF is an amazing foundation also. I'm hoping to interview some folks that work there now. Christina Wolniakowski is a dear friend of mine. She ran the West Coast region of NIFWF for a while.
Yeah. We were contemporaries. Yeah, they do nice, fantastic work and have really created a whole new financial force for natural resource conservation.
Nice. Well, so now let's talk about what you're doing now. You're the chief operating officer for the U.S. Endowment for Forestry and Communities. And can you talk to us first about, like, how do you and what do you do to make sure that funding's going to the right places? And talk to me about some of the successes of working with public dollars to really get them into the right places as this intermediary. And then we'll definitely talk about, you know, what are some things donors should think about from the private philanthropic world about how we can engage with people like you to make sure we're leveraging public dollars in the right way to support communities.
Great. Okay, well, let me give you a touch of background about the endowment. So we're a teenager. We were created in 2006 as a result of a settlement between the U.S. and Canadian governments. So we were created with a one-time infusion of $200 million that we manage in perpetuity.
Hey, Peter,
fund, of course,
Peter, hold on a second, because I think you just skipped over something that's actually a really interesting story, which is there's a settlement between the U.S. and Canadian governments. And why did that happen? Why was there a settlement there? And then you guys got this money to then take the next step.
Oh, absolutely. It's an intriguing story, and most people are not familiar with it. Of course, the U.S. and Canada are huge trade partners, and there's a lot of trade in forest products, particularly lumber. But there have been longstanding disputes between the two countries about the prices for lumber that's charged, particularly coming from Canada. Most Canadian wood is grown on government or crown lands, and many U.S. wood producers for years have complained that that wood is grown at a subsidy from the government. So there's been a trade war for decades over the price of wood coming in from Canada. The U.S. for a long time charged tariffs, collected a lot of money. In 2006, there was a multi-billion dollar settlement. A lot of money was returned to Canada. Some of the money went to forest products companies, but several hundred million was set aside for what they call meritorious initiatives. Some money went to Habitat Humanity. Some money went to the American Forest Foundation. And then $200 million was set aside to create the U.S. Endowment for Forestry and Communities.
Okay, great. Thank you for backing up on that, because I remember when that was happening, and it was a very intense and interesting story. And a lot of people and my colleagues had a lot of investment in what the outcome was there. So essentially then you were created by this settlement, and you were created by public dollars, really, is what it sounds like.
They were tariffs paid by private companies.
Good point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The point of that was we're modest sized. Our corpus has gone up and down. Right now it stands at about $250 million. We are not a private foundation. We're a public charity.
Important.
So we're not required to do the 5% payout. And that was very intentional on our part, because mm-hmm. public charities are required to derive a significant proportion of their revenues from outside sources, public sources. And so part of the reason we did that was to help foster an atmosphere of partnership building. And so in a typical year with the $250 million corpus, we end up spending $8 to $10 to $12 million of our own money for grants. And our mission is to benefit the entire forest product sector, everything from traditional wood to ecosystem services to recreation. So $8 to $10 to $12 million doesn't go very far.
Right.
And so we were really founded in an atmosphere of trying to take our resources to leverage money from others, particularly federal agencies, but also other foundations, corporations, to generate more money for natural resource conservation. So how can we take a dollar of our money and leverage that with $2 or $3 or $4 from other people's money, all for the benefit of our mission?
Yes. And this is exactly why I want to talk to you. How can we do that, Peter? Explain to us how you do
it. And, you know, we're not unique in that capacity. National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, you mentioned, is very good at it. But what we find is that not a lot of other smaller, particularly private or family foundations do it, in part because there's a lot of work involved. So in my typical work week and the work week of the other program officers at the endowment, we probably spend as much time fundraising as we do dispersing funds to our grantees. And so what we'll typically do is we'll come up with an idea or get an idea from someone else to do a particular project, decide that it's important for us, it supports our mission, and then we immediately begin looking for others who might be interested in contributing to that fund to help it get bigger.
And now for an ad, but don't go away, because Peter's going to talk next about a situation that went really well. So stay tuned. Hello, everyone. I want to let you know that I am putting forward a pretty exciting new podcast season, which is going to focus on the journey I took with one of my clients to think through effective funding strategies to reduce firearm-related suicide in rural and remote communities, specifically looking at Oregon as an example. So tune in to my podcast series September 30th through October 21st. Every Monday, I'll have a new special episode specifically discussing this issue. Thanks a lot. Peter, can you talk to me about, so you create this fund and it takes a lot of time. Can you give me an example of a situation where it's worked out really well, where you feel like you were able to use your money. I know it's not your money, but the endowment's money and public money and private money to really upscale a project on the ground to support the timber products industry and also natural resources and conservation.
Sure. Let me give you an example that's just wrapping up. One of the ecosystem services that we focused on is water, because about two-thirds of all the fresh water in the U.S. originates in a forested watershed. And it's well known that forests do a great job cleaning and storing water. And so the healthier a forested watershed is, the cleaner the water is that comes out, and the less it costs to treat, transport, and store that water. So it's in everyone's best interest to keep forested watersheds healthy. So we decided that water was going to be a focus for us, and that we wanted to do what we could to help local communities protect and better manage their forested watersheds. That's an expensive proposition. So our board agreed that this was a good purpose. They allocated about $1 million of our funding that we could then use to go out and prospect to attract other partners. We immediately went to some of our federal agency colleagues and identified the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Natural Resources Conservation Service as a good ally, and they ended up matching the funds that we put into it. And then about that time, we also received a request for proposals from the Environmental Protection Agency to run what they call the Healthy Watersheds Consortium grant program. Most people see EPA as the agency that comes in and cleans up after something bad has happened. But they also have a branch that focuses on proactive protection. So how do you keep a watershed healthy so that it won't require expensive restoration? We applied for that grant program. So filled out an application like everybody else, offered our resources, were selected to run the program, and received about a $3.5 million grant from EPA to run that program. Our board felt strongly enough about the situation that they increased the endowment's commitment to $3.5 million. We went back to NRCS and said, hey, why don't you be an equal partner? They committed $3.5 million. So we then had a grant pool of a little over $10 million that we used to run competitive grants for local entities looking to undertake watershed protection. And then once we began to give those awards, we looked for regional or state level private foundations who could also come in and match funds.
That is a terrific story. The folks that listen to this podcast, donors who want to do this kind of work, they may or may not be interested in natural resources and environmental work. So some of them might want to reach you directly. And in our show notes, we're going to have links to your website and information so people can get in touch with you. It feels like with all of your experience, there could be some advice that you might want to give to us donors, no matter what issue we work on, in terms of how can we find someone like you and your organization that's working in an area that the donors care about, no matter what the issue is. And now for an ad, but don't go away. If you want to find out how to find someone like Peter to help you be the best donor you can be to promote the issue that you care about and the cause you believe in. Hello, everyone. I'm so glad that you're enjoying my podcast. In my podcast, I hope to talk to you, the wonderful donors and philanthropists that I work with, to help you think through the most effective way to make your money matter. I also, in my podcast series and through all my trainings, want to help and support the nonprofits that are out there trying to raise money and hone their pitch. Because I'm somebody that works with donors, I get pitched all the time by amazing nonprofit leaders, so I know what it takes to raise money effectively. Please check out everything I have to offer at www.doyourgood.com. I have a whole host of course materials and lessons, videos, downloadable documents, a blog that I keep updated. All of it is 100% free for you to see and review and learn from. Please check it out. Again, www.doyourgood.com. Thanks a lot.
Well, and that's a great question, a good point. I think one thing to realize is donors don't necessarily need to develop their own relationships with federal agencies and others. I mean, as you know, it takes a lot of time to build relationships. There are a lot of nonprofit entities out there that already have outstanding relationships with federal partners who can work as intermediaries or as kind of middlemen in building a
Great
relationship
point.
With federal agencies. And so I think for a lot of donors, it may be as simple as going to the nonprofit partners that are typically their grantees and saying, hey, we'd like to expand our reach and begin to talk to some of these federal agencies directly or see what opportunities there are to leverage funds. Because that's something that most grantees do anyway. And it's common practice for a grantee to get an award from a foundation and then either be required to match it or look to match it from others. And that's the same thing that donors can do. If you've got a chunk of money set aside for a particular purpose, you can go to a federal agency or another donor or a corporation with similar interests and look for matching funds.
Although a friendly pushback to that, I think that's wonderful advice, but some nonprofits I'm thinking about that my clients support, they're too small to really be able to apply to federal agencies for grants. The federal process to actually get funds can be very complicated and can require special expertise. I'm not meaning to be negative. I'm just sort of thinking about that out loud and my experience there. And so if I was a donor and I was talking to some of my favorite nonprofits about how they're leveraging public dollars and how our grants that we give can support them in that, I'm wondering about how we can also think through that so that as donors, sometimes when we say things, you know, we can, that power imbalance is a problem and we can be like, well, how are you going to do this and that? And then the nonprofits are like, we'll try. But then they're just they're under-resourced to be able to navigate the federal bureaucracy of grants to get them. So I just want to know how you've navigated that a little bit. It sounds like you're a whole shop set up to be able to really talk to the agencies, and your success story there is a great one where you like really worked with different agencies and leveraged more dollars and then worked with private philanthropy. But I wanted to ask that question, throw it out there. I think it's for pondering.
You know, that's an excellent point. And I perhaps didn't make my previous point very clearly, but I think that that's a role that we take on sometimes is helping navigate a complex federal agency and making it simpler for our on-the-ground grantees. So in the case of the watershed project that I mentioned a few minutes ago, EPA doesn't really have a system in this case for getting money to small nonprofits. We stepped in and assumed that role. So we took on the reporting requirements and other requirements from EPA, and then were able to package their money with our money and NRCS money and make it easier for smaller nonprofits to get.
Yeah.
So we took a larger chunk of money, broken up into smaller pieces that benefited the local communities.
Well, and that's really great, Peter. Thanks for bringing that up. And while you're talking, I'm thinking about sort of some of my own personal experiences with this too, where also, you know, sometimes the state or feds recognize that and they do have like special programs that give money and resources for capacity to like watershed councils or others specifically to support them and being able to have staffing or expertise to help fundraise and write those grants as well. I'm remembering when I was at a nonprofit one time and I was applying for a federal grant, and I usually applied for the private philanthropic grants and I was doing a proposal on the federal side, and I was way overwhelmed when I was, this was ages ago. Now I have a little more experience, but it was quite something. And so that's just sort of what I was thinking about there. So it's really great that organizations like the U.S. Endowment and you all are there to navigate that so that you can allow folks who are doing the work on the ground to make a difference. And so it's a great thing for donors to sort of start seeking out some of these kind of intermediaries like you in the issue they care about. Peter, do you have anything else to tell my listeners about this now that we've been talking a while? Because this conversation is terrific and you were so clear in everything you were saying in terms of how we should think about these kind of issues. But please offer any other words of wisdom you might have for us today.
Well, two small things. One is remember that there's a cost to do all this, not necessarily a financial cost, but a cost in terms of how you manage your time.
Perfect.
So, for example, though we only have 12 employees, a significant portion of our personnel are in our financial management department because it's complex to manage federal funds. And so we devote a lot of time to very high quality fiscal management. And so it's important to keep that in mind. But, you know, there are also an increasing number of entities out there that are kind of trusted middlemen in these programs. For example, we're starting a new effort right now to try and tap into state revolving funds to secure funding for green infrastructure. State revolving fund applications are very complex, takes a lot of time to understand them. And we've connected with a nonprofit that specializes in working on complex issues like that. We're providing them funding. Their goal is to train people to go out and work with local nonprofits to access state revolving funds. Once you decide that there's value in playing that role of trying to make some of these larger, more complex chunks of federal money easier for smaller grantees to get, there are a lot of different ways to figure out solutions.
That's wonderful, Peter. And if anyone wants to get in touch with you or learn more about the endowment, can you talk to us? It'll be in the show notes, but for anyone who's multitasking, running around, listening to this, why don't you tell my listeners how to get in touch with you?
Sure. We would love to talk with folks because we think there's a lot of benefits to this approach. You can reach me by email, peter@usendowment.org, or welcome a phone call as well, 404-915-2763.
That's great, Peter. Thank you for being so accessible to us and all of your wonderful words of wisdom and conversation. Best of luck to you.
Thank you.
So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed this podcast as much as I enjoyed making it for you. So if you want to find out more about what I have to offer, please check out www.doyourgood.com and learn more ways to make your money matter. Until next time, do your good and be well.